Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome, 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 folks, to this New York Caribbean episode, Obia, Mermaids, and Magic. So, for this episode, we're going to be covering a book called Obia, Witchcraft in the West Indies, written by Hesketh J. Bell. I've done no research on the man, but I'm assuming he's an Englishman, maybe American, but he was based in Grenada in the 1890s. I'm not too sure why he was there, and it, to me, is not really that important why he was there. But the irony of a lot of these writings by white men and women, when they're documenting things and saying things about black people in degrading ways, or the Negroes do this, the N-words do that, or in this instance, he calls them Kwashi, which I'll get into that history in a moment, and he's speaking about it like, oh, they're doing this foolishness and this is craziness and this kind of madness and how they're so silly and whatever. But in their efforts to degrade the legacy of black people, all they are doing is cementing our history, our culture. Because when you go through this book, even though you had to navigate around his very belittling language, all he's doing is talking about things like calendar, he's talking about Mama Glow, he's talking about different aspects of Obia, he's talking about the Sukuya, and all of these things are aspects of our culture that millions of Caribbean people engage with. So all it's saying is that, oh, this is what our ancestors did. Okay, so we just continue the legacy. So as much as they tried, they failed, because we're still here and we're still doing it. And when I read these books, it doesn't hurt me, it gives me joy, actually, because I'm like, yes, I am seeing myself in these books, but I've just kind of put on like a pair of glasses that just filters out the bullshit, right, in terms of how they talk, and I'm just seeing the magic of ourselves. So work with me, folks, as we get into this book, Obia, Witchcraft in the West Indies. Okay, so I'm gonna set the scene. He has gone for a horse ride on his pony, I guess, to go and check out the scenery or whatever and take his mind off of stuff. And he says this: the shadows thicken and the night will soon be on me. So, remounting my pony, once more I pursue the road, which now goes downhill towards the coral coast of the windward shore. The birds overhead are twittering in the evening chat, and the glistening fireflies hover over the little silver streamlets, which from time to time I have yet to ford. A quick question. Y'all don't find fireflies are dying out back home? I find I'm seeing them less and less. As a child growing up, I used to see fireflies all over the place, and it's only in certain areas I see them. Let me know what y'all think. A glorious full moon now sheds its cool, weird beams over the scene and replaces the faded rays of the setting sun. The pure white light soon reigns supreme, and the shadows cast by the feathery bamboos skirting the road seem almost as dark as those made by the midday sun. Everything is still and quiet. Not a house nor a hut for miles around. The weird cry of the owl is heard echoing through the virgin forest on either side of the path, and the cling-cling of the blacksmith frog joins the mournful croak of the toad in his swampy home. Suddenly, a curious sound strikes my ear. My pony hears it too, and pricks his ears forward as if in apprehension of something uncanny. Gradually, the sound grows louder and louder, louder and nearer. And I have to calm my restive nag, which snorts and now then makes a frightened little shy. I soon recognize the sound of human voices, and presently, on turning a corner, come in view of a curious procession. Reining my pony, I stand in the gutter to allow the people to pass. First came 4 or 5 stalwart Negroes carrying pink, red, and white flags, followed by a group of old women dressed up in red cotton frocks with veils of the same material covering their heads and topped with a chaplet, a C-H-A-P-L-E-T, I'll say chaplet, and topped with a chaplet of some green feathering creeping plant which grows in profusion in the high woods. Then came more elderly females, some clad in blue cotton, all dancing frantically to the sound of the most barbarous music which followed them. So you see, this is what I'm talking about in moments like this when he's like, the most barbarous music. I am like, yo, it was lit. Some fire piece of drumming was going down. Because that's the only reason why they call it barbarous. Anything to do with drumming, anything that's very Afrocentric, very African-centered, they would call heathenish, they would call barbaric, all of that. So, I mean, isn't that a beautiful scene? To see, like, people carrying pink, red, and white flags. I wonder what those colors mean. To see the women dressed in red cotton frocks with veils. So, red dresses with red veils. And then to also have some kind of vine wrapped around the top. I mean, that sounds beautiful already. And then to have some in blue. And they're all dancing to this music. 3 or 4 men carried in their hands large empty gourds, covered over with a loose network of small porcelain shirt buttons, which they kept continually shaking, thus making a loud rustling sound. Ah, so it's like a shack shack. Gotcha. Serving as an accompaniment to the wild sort of song or refrain yelled out in the most minor of minor keys by the whole of the assistants. The rare was brought up by an indiscriminate gathering of Negroes, all dancing away furiously, all decked with sprays of the same green creeper. I wonder what vine that was. Questioning one of these followers, I learned that the procession was on its way to the Grand Etang, which is a huge lake in Grenada, the supposed home of a mamaglo, or siren, whom they were going to propitiate by sundry sacrifices of goats and fowls in order to obtain her for a few showers of rain, which was sadly needed for the young corn just planted. Most of these people were old Africans, although nominally Christians and perhaps communicants, still clung to the old superstition of the land of their birth, and now withstanding the lessons taught them for the last 50 years by priests and pastors of all denominations, evidently repose more trust in the power of their old Congo divinities than in the god of the Bakara, or white people. So yes, Bakara is something you see a lot, that they call them that across like the whole Caribbean, Bakara, and also in the southern US, in the Carolinas as well. They believe that the little mountain lake, as well as some of the mineral springs found in the island, are the haunts of the mermaid, or as they call her in Creole patois, Mother of Water. Mother of Water, I don't know how that's Creole patois, that just sounds like normal English, but okay. In whose power it is to grant them welcome showers of rain in season, or if offended, will withhold these bounties, and unless propitiated, ruin the prospects of a good crop of corn or other produce in which they depend. Arrived at the Grand Etang, the old women of the procession would commence an endless prayer or incantation addressed to the Mama Glow, accompanied no doubt by the sacrifice of a black goat and some white fowls. And the siren, once considered satisfied, the ceremony would conclude by an African dance to the inspiriting sound of the tom-tom, or drum, lasting till daylight, when they all would peaceably return to their avocations and would most likely be seen next Sunday hurrying to their church dressed out in their best toggery. I mean, that's something you found a lot, eh? In terms of how our ancestors still... And I think, you know what? We still do that. Like, we still believe in certain things. People may call them superstitions or whatever. But we still believe in certain things. And still also believe in mostly the Christian church. And would go to church and all of that. So, a lot of what he's saying there is things that we still do as well. Maybe not so much For most of us do not go and do ceremonies to Mama Glow, but we do have a few of the things that we still hold on to. It's a few of the beliefs, like things like Laja Bless or the Sukuya or other folklore spirits within our cultures, in our respective cultures, right? So he goes on to say this: Rhea, the goddess of dance — I was like, who's Rhea? So I checked, that's the Greek goddess of dance — has no more enthusiastic votarieties than the Negroes. Dancing with them seems as natural as walking or eating. Damn right, don't know. That is very, very true. And it's so amazing to see that how people say, like, you know, Black people just are just great at dancing. And even back then, it was recognized. So even when he's trying to say it in a way that's like, oh, they just, that's all they do is just dance, it's like, yeah, actually, we're amazing. So yes, dancing with them seems as natural as walking or eating. And not one can resist the sound of anything approaching to music without breaking out into a fantastic pasole. That's French, I'm not too sure what that means, but I think I can get the gist of what he's saying. Dancing is one of the most ancient of the arts and might almost be called a passion amongst the uncivilized races. So you see what I'm saying about the language? But it don't touch me, don't face me, because I know what he means by the uncivilized races, which is Black and brown people. And yes, it is a passion of ours. It's joyful. It is what we do to survive. Dance is integral in our culture. Unseasoned people may not just get that. Anyways, so he says, joy or sorrow, birth or death, defeat or victory, all form pretext with Africans for a dance of some sort. And many of these fantastic measures were introduced to the West Indies by the enslaved — he said slaves, but I'm changing it — by the enslaved imported from Africa. Notwithstanding the progress made by many of them in manners and education, their old African dances die hard, and in their opinion, are but inadequately replaced by the more civilized quadrille parties taken up by the upper class of the Negroes. Music hath charms to soothe the savage beast, it is generally believed. But certainly the breasts of these Blacks can hardly be savage to be soothed by the music in which they delight. So basically he's saying music can soothe the most savage of beasts, right? But the music that Black people in the Caribbean listen to is doing quite the opposite. That's basically what he's saying. Once the daily task is done and an evening meal of salt fish and plantain disposed of, the music-loving Negro brings out his tom-tom, sits in front of his little hut, and right through the small hours of the night, with the monotonous thump-thump of that untiring performer resound over hill and dale. I have seen this countless times in so many books of people who have recorded life on plantations. Now, this is post-emancipation. This is 60 years after emancipation. And during period of enslavement and after. But one of the things that they observed is like, yo, Black people don't get tired. Like, they just never get tired. They're just dancing whole night. The drummer never stopped. They'd be pouring down, quote unquote, copious streams of sweat, but they would not stop. I've seen that in Barbados. I've seen that in Suriname. I've seen it in Cuba. I've seen it in Martinique. And now here in Grenada, it is a common thread that I saw in terms of what our ancestors were doing, and like drumming, dance, integral to their, in my opinion, survival. So he goes on to say this: notwithstanding what all planters will say, it must be acknowledged that there is something very pleasing in the sound of the tom-tom beaten about half a mile off. Oh, interesting. When everything else is still and quiet, and the sound of the rippling river close by mingles with the hum of countless insects, the thump-thump of the tom-tom, mellowed by distance, seems to furnish a fit accompaniment to the music of nature and lulls one to sleep in a charming manner. But alas, for the unfortunate being whose nearest neighbor is a performer of the drum, loud and deep are the curses called down upon that persevering Negro's head as the small hours of the night find the weary planter tossing relentlessly in his sleepless couch, forced to listen to the untiring efforts of his musical neighbor. I love this. I love this for so many reasons. Number one is the fact that in many of the slave codes, the laws that were created like since the 1600s and kept being revised and things added was the banning of the drum. And we've spoken about this quite a lot on Noya Caribbean in terms of how the banning of the drum has led to the creation of many things like steel pan, has led to things like the being the catalyst for emancipation for enslaved people in Martinique, because an enslaved man called Romain was playing his drum. He was punished. It ended up being the thing, the catalyst to this huge revolt, and put pressure on the French government to emancipate the enslaved people. Then the banning of the drum just led to the developments of all different kinds of other percussion and music across the Caribbean, also in Cuba. So knowing that enslaved people were punished for playing the drum, some of them were punished very brutally, or the quarters of enslaved people would be raided and their drums would be burned, or any musical instruments would be burned. To now this, where you still find white planters living in the Caribbean, and your Caribbean people drumming, we do that thing, man, up until the late hours of the night, and disturbing whoever, right? Without this fear of these awful punishments that existed before. I personally find that this little passage here of this neighbor who's drumming through the night, these are things that resistance, these are things that saying, I am here and I'm not going nowhere and I'm going to be loud and proud into the late hours of the night doing this. So these are the things I love to find. So before I continue on with this chapter, how about we take a nice musical break with some Kalinda music from Trinidad and Tobago? Stay tuned as we have much more to come. More mermaids, or Mama Glow, or La Sirene, whatever you call her, Mami Wata. We also have Obia and Rainmakers. What does that mean? Stay tuned for the next portion of the episode. Folks, to this second part of the episode, Obia, Mermaids and Magic. So before we continue, one of the things you'll notice in this book is that he refers to black people as Kwashi. What is that? Now, I've heard lots of older Caribbean people use the term Kwashi to more or less describe people who are acting quote-unquote ghetto. If someone is too loud or too brash in their opinion, or if they litter a lot, they'll say, oh, Kwashi, right? But Kwashi is, well, how in which they spell it here, is a Ghanaian name, and it's a very common Ghanaian name, so I don't think I'm pronouncing it properly, right? Some people say it's probably Kwesi, but you'd find the spelling Q-U-A-S-H-I-E in a lot of the records. For the plantation records, the names of enslaved people are in the ship records. You put Kwashi, and then because a lot of people came across from Ghana and it was seemed to be a popular name, it was used as a name to just encompass anybody black. So you say Kwashi, right? So we're going to continue with the book, and you can see that the word Kwashi or the name Kwashi comes up. Or it could be Kwashi. So it's Kwesi, Kwashi. Maybe it's like that. It is puzzling to know what the mysterious charm can be which encourages the not over energetic Kwashi, Kwashi, Kwesi, so far as work is concerned, to beat for hours and hours the piece of goatskin stretched across a small empty barrel which constitutes the instrument he is so proficient a performer on. I once had as a near neighbor an old African named Moses, whose particular forte was the tom-tom, and every night from dewy eve till early morn, my dusky friend, dusky, dark, my dusky friend wake the hours of the night with his doleful performance. Often and often, I would expostulate him and beg him to let me into the secret of the charm lying in a tom-tom. "Ah, massa, it's so we do in the Congo," was all I could extract from him, and perhaps on my representing to him that he would finally be the death of me through the sleepless nights he caused me, the tom-tom would be silent for a night or two. But alas, human nature is weak, and perhaps Moses found that he could not exist without his nightly performance. And as I would be settling off comfortably on my left side for a good snooze till morning, that woeful thump-thump once more would wake the echoes of the valley, and sleep could not be coaxed back for many a long hour. Finally, Moses died. I did not mourn for him, nor did I think his death untimely. Well, Bunhim, the author, big up Moses. Yeah, big up Moses. And as he says, perhaps Moses found that he could not exist without playing the drum. And I truly, truly feel that. I truly feel it. I believe it. I think that our community cannot survive without that. We would be like shadows of our former selves. We would be walking skeletons almost, you know, because we don't have that thing that is fulfilling us in that way, which is the beat of the drum. I fully, fully believe in that. So he goes on to say this: in former years, when African enslaved were being imported to these islands, the Negroes used to indulge in a variety of dances, some of which were unfortunately so indecent and voluptuous. I love that. Indecent and voluptuous. Yes, my wine is indecent and voluptuous. That's my aim, for me to have the most voluptuous wine. So I love these descriptions in terms of how they think it's so awful. And I'm like, yes, yes, it was indecent and voluptuous. So it says, was so indecent and voluptuous that laws were enacted to forbid their practice. But we still wine in today anyway. The government of these colonies repressed these dances, no doubt as much on account of the danger consequent on gathering together of so many enslaved in one place, as for the moral damage it did for the Negroes. So two things, in terms of enslaved people gathering. So Article 16 of the Code Noir, which was one of the codes that were used, especially in the French colonies, is banning of music, dancing, nothing. You cannot gather in groups because, for one, it was you're engaging in indecent dance, number one. And number two, they're like, yo, if they just gathered in groups, then they can start to plan like a revolt. And so those are the two things. And they also felt like the drum incited a certain spirit of resistance. So if everyone is gathered together and they're dancing and they're doing their thing and they're like, yo, and they're reconnecting to themselves, right? And they're remembering who they are, then it's going to ignite a certain flame of resistance within the hearts of the enslaved people. And they were like, we can't have that. So those are the two reasons why these things were banned, on top of the whole be a good Christian and you have to be pious and whatever, right? So he goes on to say, in the time of slavery, if the owner of a plantation did allow his enslaved to dance on the estate, they would think nothing of walking 8 or 10 miles on Saturday nights to some place where the dance was to be given. And many of the outbreaks and rebellions of the enslaved were no doubt concocted under the cover of those gatherings. You see? I told y'all. They were shook. One of their favorite dances was called the Kalenda. Or some people call it Kalinda. But yes, the Kalinda was supposed to have been introduced from Ada, a country on the coast of Guinea. I'm not too sure where exactly Ada is. I tried checking, but I couldn't find. So it would either be somewhere, of course, either West or Central Africa. Because in some of my research, it says that Kalinda comes from the Congo region, which would be the Congo region extends into Angola as well. It's not necessarily just the Democratic Republic of Congo and so on, but it would kind of extend into that kind of west central region of Africa. So he says, although its figures and postures are very improper, I love this, it became a great favorite, especially in Spanish colonies, and it was much patronized even by the upper classes. The old Congo Negroes used to be very fond of the most solemn part of a dance, and one in which even the most violent opponents of the ballet could find but little fault. The performers, men and women, stood round in a ring, just lifted one foot from the ground, bringing it down again with a stamp in a sort of cadence, continually bowing to each other and muttering some refrain started by one of them, clapping their hands in the while. This dance had certainly nothing in it to shock decency, but unfortunately did not seem to amuse them much, and they by all far preferred the objectionable calendar. The favorite dance of the Negro houses at present is one called a belle. Well, you can find belle in all kinds of places. You can find it in Trinidad and Tobago, you can find it in Martinique, Guadeloupe, Saint Lucia, Dominica, you can find it in Grenada, you can find it in Saint Vincent. Tell me if you can find it in your country as well. But it is a very, very popular dance, and it's so beautiful to see that it existed so long ago as well. The music for it is furnished by two drums, fashioned out pieces of the trunks of trees hollowed out in different depths or small empty barrels. One of the ends is open and the other covered with a goat's or sheepskin scraped like parchment and tightly stretched across. The largest is generally 3 or 4 feet in length with a diameter of 15 or 16 inches. The smaller one called a babula. But you know, they have things called a bambula, especially in the Virgin Islands as well. A dance which looks just like belle and is called bambula. It's about the same length and is only 8 or 9 inches in diameter. These drums are held between the legs of the performers and struck with the tips of the forefingers of each hand. The player on the larger drum beats in time and slowly, while the performer on the babula beats away as fast as he can and hardly in time. But as its sound is much less powerful, though sharper than that of the big drum, it serves to make a noise without marking the cadence of the time or the movement of the dancers. These place themselves in two lines or sometimes in a circle and dance and jump and pirouette to their heart's content. This is beautiful, man. I love finding these moments of joy. You know, sometimes it just feels like it's very few and far between, but I just loved dancing and pirouetting to their heart's content. I love this. Meanwhile, one of them is chosen to sing a song, which he improvises as he goes along on a given subject, each line ending with a short refrain and taken up by all the dancers. So this is one of the things too, also in terms of how the developments of calypso music and so on, because coming from calendar, where you'd have, as he says, there is someone who is the chanteur, who is the song maker, and they would create a song based on maybe any topic, right? But a lot of topics would be social commentary, political stuff, things that's happening within their community. And sometimes the songs would get popular and travel to different areas on the islands. And you know, this is how, because those who did not have access to writing their own newspapers or to have platforms, calendar music became a means of sometimes criticizing your master, sometimes criticizing the whole entire system or the society you live in, provoking them, ridiculing them. But it was definitely a means of empowering the society. So calendar music is the roots of calypso music and how we use music as social commentary, even from this white man's perspective. All he's doing is just documenting and cementing all the things that we just needed to reconnect ourselves to. He goes on to say, the song generally has some sort of melody, as if it might be called so, but the tune is always in such a very minor key as to be very difficult to catch by the unaccustomed ear. The subject of the improvisator is very often some person known to them all, such as the manager, the plantation, or overseer. And the chant varies from extreme adulation, especially if provoked by a donation of rum or gin, to the very reverse of complimentary if the manager has had some cause to cut down or deprive them of their wages. You see? Same thing in terms of they're speaking about what's happening in their society. So either they'll big you up or they'll mash you up. And you do find that even now, when you look at calypso music, how politicians use calypsonians to create a song in order to share commentary to either big up or mash down somebody. We still do that today. Politicians will make sure they will get like a good calypso made because they understand the power of music and that this is something that has been interwoven into our society. The use of music for social and political commentary. So this is where it comes from. As a bel-air frequently lasts from nightfall to next morning, one would imagine they would have soon exhausted every subject since the deluge. But still they go on, and apparently the minstrel must be gifted with marvelous originality to judge by the entrain and spirit with which the refrain is taken up. So there we go, that's a little excerpt about bel-air, tom-tom music, all those kind of things, calendar. I love seeing all of these reconnections or just kind of connecting the dots, you know? We're going to have a brief musical break, folks, before we come back to our final section of the podcast. And how about some bel-air music?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back, folks, to our final segment of Obia, Magic, and Mermaids. So in chapter 4 of the book, Obia, Witchcraft in the West Indies, it begins like this. Anything Kwashi fails to understand and which appeals to his imagination, it is at once endued by him with much mystery and looked upon with awe and veneration. Accordingly, warm mineral springs, of which there are several in Grenada, are looked upon with a certain proportion of dread and supposed by the Negroes to be the haunts of the certain naiads or water nymphs called by them Mama Glow or Mother of Water. Some of these mineral springs are very curious and well worthy of attention. This mephitic spring, as it is called, is considered very uncanny and its vicinity is shunned by the blacks. These medicinal springs, although undoubtedly possessing beneficial qualities for the alleviation of certain diseases, are but little known and no qualified person has yet undertaken a correct analysis of their waters. Hearing the curious spring forming the source of a small river, the water of which cattle would not drink, I rode to the place, and after much inquiry, I did find an old woman who said that she could show me the spring I wished to see. Engaging her as my cicerone, we soon arrived at a clump of bush and calabash trees, in the midst of which had been erected a small thatched shed, surrounded by bamboo stuck into the ground and bearing long flag-like strips of red and white cotton stuff. From the queer-looking odds and ends disposed about the place, I made sure that I was in a temple dedicated to some mysterious rites and ceremonies, and in fact, my guide informed me that frequently Africans, old Creoles, and sometimes coolies came here to pray and dance. So of course the word coolie is an offensive term to describe indentured laborers who came from India, and it's something that we still use today, but it is, the use of it is quite a contentious topic, whether it is seen as offensive or a descriptive term, but the roots of it stem from colonial racism. So let's continue. And yes, he does use the word coolies quite a lot in the book, and kwashi. So all of these are derogatory terms to describe black and brown people. But he goes on to say this: around the shed were bamboos disposed as to form seats, and at the upper end were erected a sort of small altar on which were placed the most mysterious collection of objects. A broken cutlass was stuck into the ground between a thick tumbler and an empty oil bottle, while in front of it were two earthenware native-made jugs, one filled with flowers, the other with kola nuts. And next to this, presenting a striking incongruity, was erected a rough wooden cross, looking anything but at home in that outlandish company. Now, I find this quite interesting because you can see that there are offerings which sound really beautiful. So it's like a bottle of oil, kola nuts, and flowers. These things I find very beautiful. And then, you know, sometimes when you go to Christian churches, on the altars in the front, they'll have things like candles, flowers, there's wine and bread, in the same way you'd find in a lot of Vodun ceremonies. They'll have rum, or sometimes beer rum as well, to clean your hands, and or Florida water, flowers, sweets, cigars, chocolates, popcorn. So, you know, when we're looking at all of these things in terms of our African spirituality, quote unquote demonic and heathenish it is, I see so much beauty, like flowers, kola nuts, some oil. But let's go on. The most remarkable object, however, was at the other end of the shed and was a low mound of hard, gravelly clay, bearing on its surface a thick incrustation of salt and silicous matter. In the center of the mound was a round hole nearly 2 feet in diameter and about 4 feet deep, half filled with clear water, which bubbled up in a gurgling noise at intervals at about half a minute. Taking a bamboo about 8 feet long, I was able to thrust its whole length down through the sandy bottom of the spring. On withdrawing the stick, the water bubbled up 2 or 3 inches higher than its previous level. On examining the water, I found it saline, acidous, and very disagreeable to the taste, like brackish seawater with a strong smell and flavor of iron. Around the orifice of the spring were disposed bunches of oleander flowers and small heaps of kola nuts, evidently votive offerings laid there to propitiate some presiding spirit. Small bags containing a most heterogeneous lot of articles, rusty nails, feathers, and fish bones, and such like quote-unquote obia, were suspended on the branches of bushes all around. The old woman who acted as my guide and informed me that Africans and old Creoles came here frequently to pray to Mama Glow or Siren, who was supposed to preside over the spring. Indeed, not later than the night before, a party of Negroes had stayed there several hours, and after sundry rites and ceremonies during which a black cock and a white goat had been sacrificed, and copious drafts of water imbibed, tempered no doubt by the little drop of the crater, and finished with an African dance to the sound of the tom-tom in front of the spring. I understood from the old woman that the water taken internally was highly considered as a tonic, and that a course of baths was very efficacious in rheumatism, scrofula, and other cutaneous diseases, in fact. And so what he goes on to say here is that how their water is used as a tonic to heal certain diseases like scrofula, rheumatism, and yours, which is something that was very predominant in the Caribbean up until the mid-20th century. So we're going to move on to our final story, which is about rainmakers. Rainmakers, rainmaking, those who can conjure rain. You know, dry season is we dread. We call it guava season. And, you know, in terms of the fact that within the Caribbean, we are or were predominantly agricultural states in terms of growing sugar or whatever it is. And we needed water. So those who could conjure water. But here comes a very mysterious story coming in from St. Lucia that he retells here in his book. In one of the stories in the books, he talks about a mysterious shower of stones, which I will tell in another podcast episode. I wanted to tell this story here, and it goes like this. Another most astonishing and as accountable mystery happened a few years ago in St. Lucia in connection with a little girl who possessed the undesirable power of causing rain to fall wherever she might be. The first shower came on quite suddenly, And one day, the mother of the child was astounded on being told that rain was falling in the bedroom at the moment occupied by her little girl. Rushing upstairs at once, the lady did actually find a smart shower falling from the ceiling and soaking into the floor. Umbrellas had to be called into immediate requisition in order to investigate the mystery. It could only, however, be constated, quote unquote, that although perfectly fine and dry outside, rain was undoubtedly falling in broad daylight in the room occupied by the little girl. The child was taken into another room with the immediate effect of producing another equally smart shower, whereas the room she had just vacated became quite dry again. The unfortunate little girl was hurried from one room to another, upstairs and down again, only with the same variable effect. She was ultimately taken to the garden in the hope that she might water some beds of vegetables which sadly needed irrigation. But unfortunately, this watery little girl obtained no effect outside and was only found to cause showers in undesirable places such as bedrooms and kitchens. The news was soon bruited out and numbers came to see the young phenomenon. The poor child was in imminent danger of catching her death of cold. But happily, this attack of spontaneous waterworks only lasted a day or two, during which the time the unhappy little girl had to be accommodated in the wash house, where her watery powers were duly appreciated and turned into profit. All joking apart though, this wonderful incident really did occur, as numbers of residents in St. Lucia can testify, nor this case is a solitary one. Now, I'm from St. Lucia, and I've never heard that story before, or even the concept of rainmaking at all. So I think that one quite interesting. So I'd love to kind of dig a little bit deeper to try and find some more things about this. But finally, Père Labatte, Father Labatte, I've mentioned him so many times in the podcast and on the page. He was a French priest who was living between Martinique and Guadeloupe. And there's a rum named after him and all of that, but he documented a lot in terms of our indigenous people, life on the plantation. He engaged heavily with the slave trade and the management of enslaved people because the Catholic Church did own a lot of enslaved people in the Caribbean alongside the Anglican Church and so on. But yes, the second largest plantation in Martinique at the time Père Labatte was there was run by nuns. So yeah, I digress, but Père Labatte says this, and this was part of the Obia book. It goes on to say, in many parts of Central Africa, the medicine men are credited by their fellow savages. See what I mean about the language? But I know exactly who they're talking about. With the power of causing rain to fall. In fact, this is their principal function. No one would think of believing in this power. Yet Père Labatte gives a most wonderful anecdote relative to rain falling at the command of a Negro. And one can evidently see by the good old father's words, he wasn't a good old father. I need to interject right here. He was an awful man. He was abhorrently racist. He said that black people were the devil. He had no regard for any form of African culture, any form of, in terms of just morality surrounding the slave trade and the management of enslaved people on the plantations. The way he spoke about black and brown people is absolutely vile. But just like this guy here, Hesketh J. Bell, he documented a lot. So in his efforts to disparage black and brown people, all he did was preserve their culture and cement it for us so that we can have a paper trail and memory of these things that we're still connected to today. So he's only helped to just connect the dots even further. So thank you, Père Labatte, even though that was not your intention. So it says, one can evidently see by the good old father's words that he more than half believed in the truth of the anecdote. He relates how once in Dominica or Martinique, the island was suffering from a protracted drought, and the convent garden was especially dry and unproductive. The good fathers were in despair and seeing their crops of vegetables and herbs withering away, and daily prayers for rain were offered up. One especially dry morning, Pela Bat was astounded by the proposal of a young black enslaved person, not just slave, like was written in a book, who offered to cause the rain to fall in a very short time. The more the father laughed at his pretensions, the more the enslaved boy persisted in his assertions of being able to produce rain at will. There not being a cloud in the sky and not the faintest sign of rain, Pela Bat gave him full permission to try all he knew. The boy thereupon began to mutter a long African spell, and the worthy father most solemnly avers that in less than an hour, a small cloud appeared, and as it passed over the convent, the garden received a fine drenching shower. The rain, he goes on to say, fell nowhere else. And the pious Dominican hastens to say how he reproved the boy for his evident intercourse with the devil. And then exercised the evil spirit in which the boy was possessed. Isn't that the biggest piece of ungrateful bullshit you've ever heard? Like, you want the rain or not? So you're praying to your God and it's not happening, and he prays to his God and it's instantly the devil. So anything that's not white Jesus is the devil. Okay? And so he would have beaten the boy and performed an exorcism on him in response to the rain being able to fall on his garden. It's a lot, I tell you. So folks, this is the closing of this episode. There is so much more to this book in terms of connecting to some of our spiritual beliefs and things that we used to do that we still do today. It's an interesting read is what I'll say, but I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode as we reconnect the dots they tried to erase away, but they did not win. And big up everyone out there who is indulging in the indecency in the voluptuous wine. I will see you next time. Thank you for listening.
Est-ce que vous en valez?
Non, non, non.
Vous faites écurage?
Non, non, non.
Vous dites bonjour, monsieur?
Non, non, non.
Cadeau bonsoir, madame?
Non, non, non.
Hop, manger charbon, mais tous ces bêtes et bites, les débits c'est moi-même, mais tous ces bêtes et bites, les débits c'est moi-même, hop, hop, on va dormir tête en bas, on va manger charbon, mais tous ces bêtes et bites, les débits c'est moi-même, m'en mêler, m'embarrasser. Mon très fin, mon pavoas, t'en panis le coq des champs, même en pointe le coq qui chante, le coq qui danse. Ça qui belle, ça qui vieillit, ça qui fort, ça qui affaiblit. Dit tout tout bon pour moins bon, et on s'en bout, on à l'aise, en haleine. Hop, 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 débiter moi-même. Yo bar faire un coup de trompette, ou qu'a dit ou clarinettesse, en cas de fier la baïonnette, et bon courage, bon bois, bon bois. Dis-moi, fête, dis-moi, tuez-moi, même en bateau dernier sang, mais wall dans séance, y'est fait, mais l'autre l'a ouvert pour si au bas, dis brille en l'air, hop, 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 à manger charbon, et tous ces bêtes et bites, les débiter moi-même, et tous ces bêtes et bites, les débiter moi-même. Et c'est pas d'autres qui compèrent ma carte qui dit les finis pas faites pour monter main, mais c'est pas d'autres qui m'y mon art qui dit mal fait pas qu'à finir bien. La caille m'y sied polidor, yo dit colibri cassé qu'on arrive. Avant de gronder ta femme, Monica, son de ta petite maîtresse. Ni nec ni malédiction, milat la pas ni bon bénédiction. Les hommes café va et bien, mais pas chercher moi, dis donc, radio, dis donc. Moi, monsieur King Kong, dis donc. Moi, habillé en noir, dis donc. manque défense pour moi, ma brise et bon poc la filée. Manque croiser Volgan, manque piger Zitron, manque croiser Trenel, pour moi, masque pédé tout well. C'est pas moi qui finis, Titine qui voyait moi. En finale, au mi, moi, mi, ou. En finale, au oh, hey, hey. En finale, au oh, tio, oh, m'en prend. En finale, au oh, hey, hey. En finale, au oh, mi, moi, mi, ou. En finale, au oh, hey. En finale, au tio m'en prend. En finale, au baby wababa, oh, baby wababa, baby wababa, oh, 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 King Kong, moi habillé en noir, manqué défendre comme moi, ma pesée bon coq la ville, manqué croiser Volga, et puis je suis bon, manqué croiser Trenel, pour moi, masqué pété tout wall, pas moi qui vini, Titine qui voyait moi, en finale au mi, moi mi ou, en finale au, en finale au tio m'en prend, en finale au, en finale au mi, moi mi ou. En finale, oh, hey, hey. En finale, oh, midolipan. Fait, fait. Baby, wababa, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa,
baby, wababa, oh, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa,
baby, wababa, oh, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa,
baby, baby, wababa, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa,
baby, wababa, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa,
baby, wababa, oh, oh, oh.
Baby, wababa.
Baby wababa wo wo wo
baby wababa
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 baby wababa wo wo
baby wababa
baby wababa wo wo
baby wababa
baby wababa wo wo wo
baby wababa
baby baby wabo wababa
baby wababa
baby wababa wo wo wo
baby wababa
baby wababa wo wo wo
baby wababa
baby 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 baba
baby wababa
baby baby wababa wababa
baby wababa
baby wababa
baby wababa.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.